Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 31st of July, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. Well, straight into Grenfell, I think, Mike.
Yeah, well, another inquiry is how I've captioned this. It's not quite an inquiry. It's a so-called independent review, this time of building regulations and fire safety. So the government announced this just before the weekend. They are saying that this follows the tragic fire at Grenfell Tower, which raised serious questions about fire safety of high-rise residential buildings and subsequent government testing of aluminium composite material cladding from similar buildings across the country. So they are going to run an investigation immediate action, they say, is already underway. But this forward-looking independent review, which is going to be led by Dame Judith Hackett, is going to look at current building regulations and fire safety with a particular focus on high-rise buildings. There's what Sajid Javid had to say. Since the tragic Grenfell Tower disaster, the government has been working to make sure people living in high-rise buildings are safe. Does that fill you with confidence?
Fills me with no confidence at all, Mike, because, of course, we just go back to the fact that when good people on the streets, as it were warning the authorities the buildings weren't safe, the authorities simply say, go away, you're just the little people. And we've now got a government-appointed inquiry into failings of people up to and including government level.
Well, the main inquiry, of course, is gathering sort of responses from people about its scope. And Grenfell Tower residents have only until the 4th of August to get their thoughts in. So the 4th of August is the deadline for that.
Yeah, so it's lots and lots of pressure to make sure that people aren't aware, then the time limit's gone. And later on, they'll be saying, well, of course, we gave you the opportunity to comment, but people didn't come forward.
Well, that might be what they're hoping for. I think they are getting some responses.
OK, well, this gives us a clue as to where we are in the country. I've chosen the headline from Russia Today, but it's being reported in other news agency. And basically, the High Court has ruled that Tony Blair can't be prosecuted over the Iraq war. And this has all come about because General al-Rabat accused the former Labour leader of committing a crime of aggression by invading Iraq in 2003 to overthrow Saddam Hussein. He wanted to take a private prosecution. But the decision within the establishment of the UK is that this is simply not possible. And we've got some extremely interesting issues that have come up as a result of this. And I think many of these fall straight within the remit of the British Constitution Group, because, of course, we're looking at constitutional issues and the law itself. Well, this is what the big man has said, Roger Thomas, the Lord Chief Justice. And he said, together with his colleague, Mr. Justice Ouseley, that they had to dismiss the general's application. And he said there was no prospect of the case succeeding. So that sentence alone, I think, raises a huge number of issues because, of course, you're prejudging. Who are they to say that it has no prospect of succeeding? Wouldn't that be the decision of a jury, possibly?
You would have thought so, yes.
We would have thought so, but clearly, I've got to add this in. I think that, of course, this gentleman was telling the truth. He knew it had no chance of succeeding because the courts would ensure that the case did not succeed.
Yeah.
And if we follow this on through, let's just bring in a bit more. Apparently, Westminster Magistrates Court refused to issue summonses in November last year on the grounds that ex-ministers had immunity from legal action. And in any event, the current Attorney General, Jeremy Wright QC, would have to give permission. And I think I preempted this quite nicely because Wright intervened in the case and his legal team urged the Lord Chief Justice to block the challenge. So, Mike, how do you feel about living in a country where we now have the situation that ministers, ex-ministers, are immune from prosecution. I thought that was law that they were trying to bring in from the European Union.
Well, I think the best way to respond to that is just to comment on the Lord Chief Justice's name, because of course you put his full name down there, which is Roger John Laferne Thomas. But of course he's known as John. So John Thomas, and anybody that knows anything about British slang will realise just how appropriate that is.
Indeed. Well, somebody's put in our chat box that, wait a minute, this immunity from prosecution, this is all part of the European Union. But no, it gets more complicated than that. And the Telegraph is also picking up on the report. Tony Blair prosecution bid over Iraq war is blocked by the High Court. This is my headline, Who Says Ex-Minister is Above the Law? And apparently this has come out of functional immunity arising from customary international law and treaty law, and that confers immunities on those performing acts of state, usually a foreign official. Any person who, in performing an act of state, commits a criminal offence is immune from prosecution. So if we accept, which I don't, but if we just accept that functional immunity is actually part of British law, this sentence, which has come from Wikipedia, but I believe it is correct, we are now living in a country where we can have criminals running the country, they're immune from prosecution, carry on, there's nothing to see.
Yeah.
And of course, this gives us the solution to child abuse, because if any criminal offence is immune from prosecution, we can have paedophiles abusing children and running the country, and there's nothing to see.
Absolutely.
So we just bring in that, of course, Tony Blair has no immunity under common law, which is the true law of the land. And we're now right back into the key issues of the fact that at the moment the government, this government and previous governments are still working on their plan to undermine and demolish common law because of the very protections that it brings us. So the government at the moment and the senior judiciary are saying that ministers are immune from prosecution from criminal acts. And no surprise then that those same ministers are demolishing the Constitution with its protections of common law.
And of course, what they're effectively saying is that anybody that's immune from the law is therefore being placed at the same level as God from a legal, a lawful standpoint. Well, that's perhaps Tony Blair does view himself in that way. Maybe that's part of it.
I think the ego is big enough that he thinks that he's fairly close to the elevated spiritual level.
But the point is that if you look back through the last 2,000 years, or certainly 1,800 years of British history, the fight all the way throughout history is about the divine right and the divine right of kings.
Yes.
And that's really what the British Constitution Group is about, of course, is reasserting our constitution and denying this notion of a divine right of parliamentarians.
Well, this is absolutely right, Mike, and perhaps now because Tony Blair is such a wonderful focal point, an infamous focal point, perhaps we've now got the start of some really good foundations for people to understand why the work of the British Constitution Group is so important in bringing back to the attention of people the protections that we should have under our constitution and common law.
Yeah,
no doubt we'll be covering more on this in the coming weeks.
Right. Health, National Health Service. Well, this is related to Brexit in many ways, because National Health Service is going to recruit 2,000 more GPs, they say, from abroad as it meets its staffing targets. That's according to Simon Stevens, who's the head of NHS England. And this is in addition to 500 already sort of planned. He said that an industrial scale recruitment program from abroad is underway or is needed. The government has set out a target of recruiting 5,000 GPs by 2020. Nobody really thinks that they're going to manage to meet that target. So what did Jeremy Hunt have to say? Well, first of all, Mr. Stevens, he said, although there's some good signs of progress on increases in GP training, Nevertheless, there are real pressures around retirements. So people are leaving, people are retiring, and they can't fill those gaps. And so the conclusion we've come to is that in order to increase the likelihood of being able to have 5,000 more doctors in general practice, we're going to need a significantly expanded industrial scale international recruitment program. We intend to launch that in the autumn. So despite Brexit, this is part of the reason I believe they are particularly concerned about immigration policy and so on, and the notion of not having any cliff edges. Jeremy Hunt said that, the NHS needs to recruit doctors and nurses from all over Europe, and this is going to continue after we leave the European Union. Well, that's pretty good, because today he's also mentioning, Brian, 21,000 additional staff required for mental health programs, for mental health care in this country, and they aren't going to be able to source those people from the UK because they haven't put the training in place in the last number of years.
This is the key bit they never talk about, Mike, is why we haven't got these people. And on one hand, we're saying that we haven't got people within this country who are trained to do these jobs. And on the other hand, we know that we've brought in people, particularly from the European Union, who can't speak English with enough clarity to do their job within the NHS anyway. So what we see is this chaotic situation. And let's remember that those Tory MPs a couple of years ago were actually saying that the Conservative Party planned to introduce a period of what they said was being called constructive chaos.
Yeah.
That seems to be the period that we're in.
But anyway, so as I say, Jeremy Hunt talking about the biggest expansion of mental health services in Europe. They need 21,000 people. This is a softening of Brexit once again, but the focus being on mental health.
Absolutely. Well, let's follow through on this. We've obviously got the BBC headline here, mental health staff recruitment plan for England. But the other place that is going to be using mental health staff, and it would appear that some of these are going to be their own trained people, is the Department of Work and Pensions. So if we go back, this is March this year. Interesting headline from The Independent. Department of Work and Pensions fit to work tests cause permanent damage to mental health, study find. So we're recruiting more mental health professionals, but the Department of Work and Pensions is not only recruiting more of these people itself, they're also using them on the ground. And on Friday, I had a particularly interesting report from a lady who'd recently gone into DWP up in the Midlands area. And she was horrified to be asked a whole series of questions about her mental health. And she said she took great delight in realising that there was something very dangerous going on here. And so in every box, she put down how exceptionally well she felt. And that resulted in the professional there. She didn't know whether the gentleman was mentally qualified in mental health or not, but he questioned her as to how she could be so happy while she was there in the Department of Work and Pensions.
So, of course, the Department of Work and Pensions, some people going there for benefits, for advice on unemployment and so on, and suddenly they're getting some kind of mental health screening.
Well, they are. And let me just read a little bit of this. This is from that Independent report. It says the government's fit to work tests for access to disability benefits are causing, quote, permanent damage to some claimants' mental health from which they are not recovering. The research conducted by academics at Edinburgh's Heriot Watt and Napier Universities found that the work capability assessment experience for many caused, quote, a deterioration in people's mental health, which individuals did not recover from. So what they're really saying is that the stress and the aggressive way in which the Department of Work and Pensions is using these mental health tests on people who are already under huge pressure because they haven't got jobs, presumably they're short of money, maybe they're having trouble housing or feeding themselves, the pressure of those tests was causing them harm. Not just harm that they were recovering from, but permanent mental health. So this appears to me, Mike, to be an attack on the individual. Mm. We've got the mental health field. We've got psychology, psychiatry being used to attack people instead of support and help them.
So if you are creating a new mental health profit centre for potential future privatisation with the NHS, of course you've got to provide the feedstock for that, perhaps. Maybe that's a harsh phrase to use, but I'm using that because that seems to be the way these people are viewing ordinary human beings.
Follow the money. Yeah. So let's just do that. I did a little bit of work on just one of the charities that was providing advice on that work capability assessment, and this is Rethink Mental Illness. Of course, this is a charity advertising itself as doing great work for people with mental health problems, but they've had to produce this little article advising people how to go about dealing with the Department of Work capability assessment. So it must be stressful if Rethink Mental Illness has had to provide some advice. But let's choose another one. And I've gone to this one here, MQ. It says it's transforming mental health through research. And this is one of the quotes from that website. With the help of our supporters and the brightest scientists, we will uncover breakthrough findings and illuminate our understanding of mental health. So it says that they are going to achieve a breakthrough. And why do they want a breakthrough? So that they can understand mental health. It's nothing to do with actually helping people on the ground. So I thought it would be good value to have a look at MQ and who's supporting them. So let's bring them in. And the first thing we find on the website is Wellcome Trust. And we'll come on to them in a minute. They are then claiming they're supported by business, but the only organisation listed is Q5, which says it's there to achieve change in every quarter. Of course, the change is not defined. They say that they're experts in organisational change, helping to build better businesses across the world. So this is all corporate, Mike. This is all about leadership and change. We don't see a lot about compassion and people. Let's have a look at who they work with. Well, now we're getting into the meat of it. We work with Barclays, British Airways and Dow Jones. So that's all good stuff. But let's remember that Wellcome Trust up there, the big W. And if you're not aware of this organisation, you need to be. This is their website. And here's the history about the founder, Henry Wellcome. He got very interested in pharmaceuticals. He got very interested in research about what products could apparently help people's health. But this ballooned. And basically, the organisation then became a billion dollar organisation, which was eventually sold on to GlaxoSmithKline. So we've got a research organisation which is now hand in glove with one of the biggest pharmaceuticals in the world, interested in what? Profit.
Yeah.
So we follow the charity. Who do we find behind the charity? We find the big business, which, of course, needs the sick people in order to use the pharmaceutical products. And this is going back to Q5. I just chose one of the people. Rick is managing director of Q5, based in North America. He has executive level experience across industries and consulting roles and leading companies such as Accenture, Pfizer, Bank of America, Citi, Target, News Corporation and Dow Jones. But apparently all these people are interested in helping individuals with mental health problems.
Renowned philanthropists.
Indeed, apart from GlaxoSmithKline sitting there in the background.
Okay, yesterday, Brian, was World Day Against Trafficking in Persons. So the United Nations Office on Drug and Crime called on people yesterday to act to protect and assist trafficked persons. They say that human trafficking is a crime that reduces a person to a commodity to be bought, sold, exploited and abused. They say criminal groups feed off the world's conflicts and the instability and insecurity they create. Conflict is a breeding ground for criminal activity. People forced from their homes are falling prey to human traffickers as they try desperately to escape the violence. And they say that the global report on trafficking in persons shows that before 2011, Syrians, for example, were less likely to become victims of this cruel crime. Since the beginning of the Syrian crisis, however, an increasing number of countries in Europe, Asia and the Middle East have detected trafficking victims from Syria. It's not just human trafficking that does that, of course, because as the UNODC is mainly referring to trafficking of live humans into a life perhaps in the sex trade, forced labour. But of course, we've got to also consider organ trafficking, child soldier, child military, and child marriage. So let's just have a look at some of the statistics from the report. So every year, human traffickers are making about £130 billion, about $150 billion profit from the trade, £130 billion. This is not a small business. 21 million victims worldwide, 54% end up in sexual exploitation, 38% end up as forced labour, and 8% other, and that includes organ trafficking. Now, tomorrow, Brian, I'm hoping to have Vanessa Bailey on the programme, and we'll be discussing perhaps the issue of human trafficking in Syria, because she is receiving some pretty unpleasant reports about what's happening to the injured in Syria, going off to hospitals in Turkey and coming back dead and minus some parts.
And of course, we're getting the same type of story coming out of NHS and care homes at the moment. And the interview that I did, Mechanics of Modern Murder, was starting to look in that direction. I will say, as I always do in talking about this type of thing happening, we're not pointing a finger at everybody working within the NHS. We know that there are many, many good people trying to do their best in very difficult circumstances. But what we do know is that the number of cases where people are dying under unusual circumstances is increasing. And of course, it was the British government that helped to quash the proper report and subsequent report from the inquiry into Staffordshire hospital deaths. So we are also receiving reports about the stealing of body parts, and this is certainly not confined to overseas. We should also say, I think, Mike, isn't it interesting that Tim Farron, of course, was informed about those missing Syrian children. They brought to UK for safety, some 350 of them go missing. And Tim Farron calmly says, well, yes, I think they've probably been trafficked or abused or something worse. So these statistics agree with that. But we've got yet another politician who simply doesn't care, or is he aware?
Well, look, this business, as far as I can see, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, but this looks to me like the same type of business model as the drugs trade, where you put a small amount of money into organisations like Europol, who say that they're dealing with human trafficking, but you put a small amount of money into that so that there's plausible deniability that nothing's being done, and then you permit this trade to go on. Look at the difference in the profit. This is profit, not turnover, yeah. £130 billion. How much money is Europol being given to deal with this problem? So if they're only getting 1% of that budget, how the heck are they supposed to do anything about it? It's therefore our governments are complicit in the activity.
Indeed. Well, what is our government now authorised to undertake criminal activities and be protected by the British judiciary and courts? They're now bigging up on spying. And thank you very much to the lady who sent this one through to us from the Nottingham Post. And it's essentially an advert article. Do you have the brains to be an intelligence officer in Nottingham? And it's talking about the Gangmasters and Labour Abuse Authority, which it says is a not-so-secret government agency dedicated to fighting modern slavery and forced labour, and it is recruiting intelligence officers. We're just bringing this extra bit here. It says, as an intelligence-led organisation, we rely and act upon information from workers, businesses and members of the public about any non-compliant or unlicensed activity undertaking compliance inspection activity and investigation under the criminal law. Well, except for politicians, of course, because they're immune. And the pay comes in at $22,769 a year, as well as generous holiday entitlement and other benefits. Now, I'd never heard of this organisation, Mike. I was fascinated. But what do I pick up from this? More and more organisations where the state is spying, is paying for individuals to spy on other members of the public. This, of course, is the model of the Stasi system in Eastern Germany, or even the Soviet in the Soviet Union. It is immensely dangerous, but not to worry, because the organisation is independent. So let's have a look at it. Here it is. Well, actually, you see that on the top, it's part of the government, Gangmasters and Labourers Abuse Authority, and big picture of presumably exploited workers being protected. So this is the sort of thing that they've got on the site itself. We're a non-departmental public body governed by an independent board made up of a chair and six members who were recruited for their respective knowledge, experience and skills. And it says our licensing scheme regulates businesses who provide workers to the fresh produce supply chain and horticultural industry to make sure they meet the employment standards required by law. So you've just told us that we're going to have a lot more people brought into the country supposedly to work in the NHS, but we're now getting the public to spy on other people because presumably they can't even deal with the people who are here at the moment. But it is independent, although it's on a government website. So I always like to have a look at the people. This is just a couple of them. And the chair is Margaret Beals. And she apparently enjoyed a successful career in the energy sector and was appointed chair in July 2011. She's been involved in various government reviews of GLAA and its work, taking particular interest in updating the organisation's governance. So there we are. And there's a whole host of other people that you should have a look at. I gave them a call earlier on this morning and said, can you tell me how the board is appointed? And apparently it is the Prime Minister, him or herself, that does that. So they're independent, but appointed by the government.
Independent, but appointed by the Prime Minister?
Indeed.
Right. OK, good stuff. Right, surveillance then. Let's get on to that, because the Surveillance Camera Commissioner has published his civil engagement plan. And so that's pretty exciting stuff. This is part of the National Surveillance Camera Strategy for England and Wales. And Tony Porter, who is the Surveillance Camera Commissioner, published this today. And it's work which has been led, apparently, by Professor William Webster from this organisation, CRISP. That is the Centre for Research into Information Surveillance and Privacy. And as well as Professor of Public Management and Policy at the University of Stirling. And it has been signed off by the Commissioner's Strategy Group. So they aim to ensure that citizens have free access to information relating to the operation of surveillance cameras, that we have better understanding of the rights in relation to operation of surveillance cameras, that we have an understanding of how surveillance cameras function and are used, and that organisations have an understanding of the information relating to the operation of surveillance cameras that they should make available to citizens. So as a citizen, Brian, are you aware of all these things already?
I'm aware, certainly aware of the cameras, Mike, and I'm going to say I don't feel more reassured by somebody telling me more about the cameras. So I think what we need is to get rid of the cameras and the surveillance.
Well, that would be a good step. So, but perhaps since we're being told that we have access to all this information, we should do something about getting hold of it en masse, and perhaps we can overload them with requests.
A fine task for our viewers and listeners to get those Freedom of Information requests in to just establish how big this state spying apparatus is and who's actually running it, who's responsible for it. Well, I couldn't resist bringing the BBC back in, because this morning I started off by idly looking at the BBC news site. This is what I saw. So there was the headline about the NHS to boost mental health staff numbers. What else have they got? Fifth of MPs still employ family members. So if you've got a criminal above the law MP, he can employ his family to his entire satisfaction. We've got William and Kate, World War One battle, a country divided. This is all about the division of India. Taxes, etc. So that all looks good. But then I noticed that the BBC then marked itself as to who read what. And I was fascinated to see that the most read was Angelina Jolie, who is denying that child auditioning in Cambodia is cruel. So the BBC can't report on child abuse in this country, Mike, but it can report on Cambodia. And despite all the other headlines there, she's taken the number one slot. Then we've got dozens freed after German cable car crash. So there's the ghoulish element. Motor rip-offs over insurance and rental. And UK won't cap taxes. So I just was interested that having put Dross on the page, sorry, the BBC was then clearly showing that people were focusing on that Dross. We're just bringing this one because we got the most watched here. This is some of the videos. And today I climbed Kilimanjaro, says girl aged 8. Well, this is dealing with some of the important issues in the country. And Luna's life after Hogwarts. So this is £3.74 billion worth of news organisation. And it's talking about Angelina Jolie and Hogwarts. And it's impressed that it's got those as number one in the news headlines.
Good stuff. Value for money, Brian.
Value for money.
Value for money, AV8 DVDs. Today is the last day to get them at the special price. Tomorrow they go up to the full price, which I think is $64.99. Get onto the UK Column website today if you can, if you want a set. You'll get them for, I think it's 20% discount, but you can see that for yourself when you get on the site.
Indeed. And we're going to say a very big thank you from BCG to all those that organised the meeting in Portsmouth Friday and Saturday just gone. It was a really wonderful couple of days, and I think the discussions are going to lead to something very positive indeed. And of course, what were we talking about? We were talking about matters to do with the state of the country, the need for our constitution, which we do have, and of course we were talking about common law. But thank you very much to those that helped set that up, and especially Dawn. Thank you.
Right, just a brief mention of Russiagate here, because if we move across the Atlantic for a second, because of course the investigations last week into Russiagate continued, and we suggested that Chuck Grassley was in fact looking for issues surrounding the FBI, leaks to the press, and whether how close the FBI or how much the FBI was involved in the Christopher Steele dodgy dossier. Well, it looks like we're starting to, well, at least some people suggesting that we're heading towards some prosecutions here. This is James A. Baker, who is a close collaborator of James Comey and is or was FBI lawyer. So it looks like he is going to be under investigation, perhaps under indictment in the not too distant future for leaking stuff to the press on that. Brian, another week and, more military exercises. Now, over the last couple of weeks, we have been, I guess fair to say, a little disparaging of the new aircraft carriers. Is that unfair?
Well, it's not unfair at all. We've been pointing out gross inadequacies in defence, and that isn't a slight on the men and women who are serving at the moment. This is talking about the criminal government regime we've got, which is procuring defence.
Right. And on Thursday, the US brought the USS George H.W. Bush, I think, the carrier group to Portsmouth. And that is for an exercise. And so let's hear what the Royal Navy is saying about that exercise.
The United Kingdom is embarking on a huge journey to re-establish carrier strike capability. Central to that is the construction of two enormous aircraft carriers, But the rest of the supporting elements, the protecting frigates and destroyers, submarines, support shipping, fixed wing and rotary wing aircraft, all come together in a carrier strike group. Exercise Saxon Warrior, which is happening this summer in UK waters, involves the visit of an American carrier strike group integrating with UK force elements and other partner nations, conducting maritime exercises using the ranges and airspace training facilities in the United Kingdom. Exercise Saxon Warrior offers a fantastic stepping stone to build up UK carrier strike capability before Queen Elizabeth and Prince of Wales are formally in service. But also it demonstrates to our NATO partners our commitment to regenerating this capability and what we will be able to offer into the NATO pot in the years ahead.
So does that fill you with satisfaction?
The only thing that fills me with satisfaction in that video clip, Mike, is the fact that he was actually dressed to a standard of a naval officer compared to the captain of Queen Elizabeth, who looked like somebody serving at McDonald's. But the officer there mentions the key word, regenerating carrier capability. So what he is admitting is, of course, that under David Cameron, carrier knowledge, ability, know-how, expertise utterly destroyed. And of course, the carriers that we had, perfectly operational, with perfectly operational Harrier aircraft, were simply sent to the scrapyard, ships to the scrapyard, aircraft sold off on the cheap. The whole capability destroyed. And here we are now, as he says, having to recreate it. We're having to train the individuals, we're having to get the ships to sea, we're having to procure the aircraft, and at the moment I believe there's only 14 or 16 F-35Bs in the country. So he is admitting that the British government committed treason by exposing the nation to overseas threats by destroying our military capability. And the other thing is, of course, that it isn't just the carriers. You have to have the protection around the carriers. And the truth of the matter at the moment is that we don't have the maritime patrol aircraft, we don't have the frigates, we don't have the air defence capability, and we don't have the nuclear submarine capability to protect those aircraft carriers. That is why he's shifting the focus to the Americans.
So that's what Exercise Saxon Warrior is about then. It's taking place at the moment because that little video clip was recorded some time ago. He's exactly describing that, isn't he? He's describing how we don't have a carrier group unless we're involved with the Americans and other partners.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, Mike, that the language has been changed because, of course, we had a Royal Navy, we had a fleet, and within that fleet, even a few years ago, we had three carriers, which meant that you had two operational. So now we're down to, we may be able to put one carrier battle group together. We may be. And of course, the reality is we can't. We're not going to be able to. The Navy was numbers were reduced in order to lock us into the European plan for military unification. And Brexit has thrown the door open on this because, of course, the lies are now being exposed. If we'd voted to stay in the EU, they would have simply have created the unified military European military structure by now.
Now, as Alex is saying in the chat box, it was Navy Day in Russia yesterday and they were showing off their huge flotilla.
Can I just add in there very quickly, of course, we used to have Navy Days because we had Navy Days big enough to bring ships into all the major ports. What you were doing was showing those ships to the public, getting the public on board. Now we don't have Navy Days because we haven't got a proper Navy. We haven't got enough ships. We have Armed Forces Day.
Yep. Speaking of Russia, they are also holding some exercises. So the two main exercises, this one here, which RT was live streaming out earlier on, that's a still from the shot. This is the 2017 International Army Games underway near Moscow. Teams from seven countries taking part. These were first held in 2015 and they'll compete in 28 different disciplines, including contests with tanks, snipers, air and sea disciplines. And in the meantime, according to TASS here, the snap combat readiness checking happening in the Eastern Military District, 8,000 military personnel, 50 warplanes and helicopters, 3,000 pieces of military equipment taking place in exercises there. The Russian Defense Ministry saying during the combat readiness check, the personnel of one of the motor rifle units of the combined arms army deployed to the region marched for 150 kilometers and crossed the Onon River. During the march, MiG-24 attack helicopters covered the military hardware and so on. So they are exercising quite heavily, but we certainly don't have the capability to put those types of exercises together.
Well, we don't, Mike. That's it.
Pressure continues to build. Pressure on North Korea because of their ballistic missile tests, but also pressure on Iran. So the United States were pretty upset with Iran for launching a satellite-carrying rocket into space. They didn't like this at all. This, they said, was in breach of UN Security Council resolutions. They issued a statement. They said, with its latest launch of a space launch vehicle on 27th of July, Iran has again demonstrated activity inconsistent with United Nations Security Council Resolution 2231. We condemn this action. The resolution calls upon Iran not to undertake any activity related to ballistic missiles designed to be capable of delivering nuclear weapons, including launches using such technology like this launch. It's not really very good English, but anyway, space launch vehicles use technologies that are closely related to those of ballistic missile development, in particular to those of intercontinental ballistic missiles. And that was France, Germany, United Kingdom, and the United States released that. They didn't like that very much at all. In the meantime, though, pressure in the South China Sea still continuing, but the Chinese have decided to get involved, and they are now sending ships, reconnaissance ships, to join Russia in the Pacific to try to put some pressure on the US. And of course, the situation between the US and Russia heading down the toilet, really, because of sanctions that the Congress have pushed through this sanctions bill. Not just Russia on the end of that sanctions bill, of course, Iran as well. But we wait with bated breath to find out whether Donald Trump will actually ratify that, will sign that bill off. Then we've got Fars Network here making the point that Syria is complaining to the United Nations that the US operating in Syria are systematically targeting residential areas. Now, if that is true, and I've no reason to believe it, and in fact, Vanessa Bailey on yesterday's Sunday Wire program, 21st Century Wire, said that was absolutely the case, that the US appears to be targeting civilian areas. The hypocrisy in that is immense, bearing in mind how much PR was pushed out and rhetoric against Russia and Syria with regards to eastern Aleppo. And yet they seem to be, the Russians and the Syrians, there was never any real evidence that they deliberately targeted anybody, any civilians, whereas there seems to be evidence building that the US is doing exactly that.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that tomorrow as well.
Okay, well, let's bring in Angelina Jolly, because I anticipated that a few people would be interested in this story. So here's BBC News simply saying that she denies cruel Cambodia child auditions. Well, the BBC said something about this. What I'm going to bring on screen is a letter from Melanie Shaw. And of course, Melanie Shaw is an adult, but as a child suffered unbelievable cruelty. This is her latest letter to me, in which she says, of course, that she is still being held in solitary confinement. And what I'd like to point out, of course, is that the BBC refuses to investigate child cruelty, child abuse, child murder in UK, because the trail leads to Westminster, it leads to Parliament. And as we've heard earlier in the news, it's now official from our law lords that our MPs are above the law, so they can traffic, abuse, murder children at will, and they're going to be protected by the courts. The BBC, of course, prefers to focus the nation on what's happening to children in Cambodia. And in saying that, of course, my sympathy is with children who are suffering in Cambodia. We would say, though, at the moment, the first task is to deal with the situation in this country so that we can help those children. We can help children across the board, sorry, I should say. We'll end on another BBC note. And I just found it sickening, I think, Mike, that the BBC, which has continually attacked everything that servicemen and women have died for in two major world wars, has picked up on the ritual which has been going on in the 100 years remembrance for Passchendaele. I'll leave people to think about this, but I was intrigued by the lurid lights. Apparently, if you light up a building with lurid coloured lights and you project some history of Passchendaele, this is in some way remembering those who've lost their life. We then had a picture of people who, as far as I can see, Theresa May on the left, are fully implicated in continuing the sort of death that Passchendaele represented. And then we've got this weird ritualistic stuff that we've got the creator of or the author of War Horse has brought in some of his material. So we've got a really vile and unpleasant battle in Passchendaele now being made into bright lights and a little bit of ritualistic stuff around War Horse. What does that mean? I'll leave viewers and listeners to think about that. That's it from UK Column today. We would say we've given you a lot of information today. It's up to you to use it in order to help get the lid off what's really happening in the country. But if you're interested in common law, you're interested in the Constitution, the cards are now fully on the table that apparently Parliament in the UK believes it's sovereign. Parliament believes that its MPs are above the law to the extent that they can commit whatever criminal act they like and get away with it. It's up to all of us to challenge that system to ensure that we can help reassert the Constitution and common law. It is simply up to us. Thanks very much for joining us. We will be back same time tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.